Now, I just tell people one of the things you got to remember is sometimes the hardest punishment that God gives us is when He just lets us do what we want to do and the natural consequences of our sin follow us. That's really what it is. Sometimes my prayer to God is, Lord, deliver me from temptation so I won't do those things because then the natural consequences follow me. Okay? And so God is just saying, if you leave me and I just take my hand of protection off of you, which you need, then foreign invaders are coming in. And I'll not be there because you don't want me, so you got what you wanted. I'll leave. The foreign invaders come in, and I'm not there to stop them. And you won't believe the terrible things that are going to happen to you when they come. What's the one thing that he kept reading for the last couple of verses that were terrible? What was it? You're going to eat your children. Okay, you're going to eat your children. Now, I can imagine that probably somebody read that back in the 1400 BCs as they were enjoying God's blessing of manna and all the things that God was doing for them. And again, he delivers them into the land of Canaan, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they say what? That'll never happen. And yet we're looking here at around 600 years later in the time of Elisha, and the king's name is King Joram. Again, as you're in 2 Kings chapter 6 and going into 7, it's hard to find his name, I believe. But as you're looking at King Joram, these things that God said in Deuteronomy 28 are coming true. You don't want me? I'm leaving. The foreign enemies are coming. Nobody's there to stop them. They're going to surround your cities, and things that you don't think are possible are going to happen. Okay? And the whole thing is, it's all because you said, we don't want God. And God's like, okay, I'll leave. You got what you wanted. And that's the worst thing you could have had in your life is what it is. So when you tell God to leave, a lot of times he'll leave you. Now, if you're saved, he won't leave that way. But again, you don't want God in your life, then he'll leave. I do like the promise, though, if you draw nigh to God, what's the next part of it? He'll draw nigh to you. That's pretty good, is it not? So that's where we are. I never heard of this guy. Anybody ever hear of this guy? That's a great middle name, isn't it? No wonder they called him DT. Okay? DT Niles. I looked this up, and this is what I found. I've heard this quote for years and years, okay? And it's attributed to him, okay? Though I don't really know who he is. But he said, evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where to get bread. How many of you have ever heard that? Okay? It's something I've been familiar with. It's just one beggar telling another beggar where to get bread. I kind of thought about that. You know, I don't know. And you don't even have to be a beggar to kind of be a witness. I kind of thought of it. Down at the fair, okay? I've been down at the fair. I've been seeing people walk by and they're eating something. And I say to them, man, what is that? And they tell me what it is. I go, where did you get that? I'm not telling you. That's not what they do. What do they say? You know, well, if you go down this aisle here and head on down there, there'll be a booth on the right, and this is what it is. Wow, I didn't know that. Okay? So you don't have to just be a beggar. But again, you've got something that somebody else wants, and all you do is what? Tell them where you got it. Tell them how to find it. That's simple, folks. Now watch this. It's not having you tell somebody something you don't know anything about. Okay? I mean, you're walking around there or whatever, and somebody comes up to you and says, hey, what are you eating? Now, I don't know what one of the most famous things is over at the fair. I know chicken on a stick is pretty famous. Person sold a couple thousands of pierogies, right, or whatever, but chicken on a stick, you're walking around. You got a chicken on a stick, okay? You waited in line, 50 people long, but you got it, right? You got your chicken on a stick, and somebody comes up and goes, hey, what is that? Your answer is not what? Well, I don't know. You know exactly what it is. Nobody is asking you a question you don't know the answer to. It's chicken on a stick. Well, where'd you get it? You know where you got it. You know, you kind of go out there and you find the line. Get in the end of it, okay? That's where chicken on a stick is. You can tell somebody there. Or maybe you could be a little bit more proactive. You're eating chicken on the stick and you say to somebody, you know what? In this whole fair, this is the best thing here. What is? Well, this chicken on a stick. Oh, wow, where'd you get that? Now, notice you have not been engaging somebody in a topic that you have no idea about. Witnessing's the same thing. Are you saved? Do you know the answer to that? I hope you do. The answer should be what? Yes! And if somebody says, well, how'd you get saved? I don't know. Witnessing is not some hard subject you know nothing about. I just tell people, it's just one beggar telling another beggar where I got the bread. That's literally all it is. Now, again, if you don't know the story I'm going to, it's found in 2 Kings 7, but we're in chapter 6. And we'll just start doing some reading, okay? Talking about Israel, the 10 northern tribes. We're not talking about Judah. We're talking about the northern tribes. Again, they're close to Syria. And it says, it came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his host and went up and besieged Samaria. There was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver and a fourth part of a cob of dove's droppings, if you want to put it that way, okay, dung, okay, for 5 pieces of silver. Okay, now, I usually tell people something like this. In our world today, a lot of times when there's a famine, it's not because God has not given the earth enough food. It's that people have invented systems or they're so corrupt they don't distribute the food that God has given to those who need it. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So when you say, oh, there's a famine in a certain part of the land, hey, there's enough food in the earth to feed everybody. Don't even get worried about that. It's just man has developed corrupt governments that keep food from people. Okay. It wasn't here. Now listen, this famine is taking place. It's not because it stopped raining. Now, there was a time in Elijah's day when that happened, but it is not because there is a famine in the land because of lack of rain. It's because an invading army has come in and they have captured the food and they're not giving it to the people in the city. Okay, so they've besieged the city, they've captured the food, and they're not letting the people in the city, the food sources, the food stores in the city have gone dry and they're not allowing any food into the city. So it's a famine because of the distribution. Okay. Notice verse 26, as the king of Israel was passing by upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him saying, help my Lord, O king. And he said, if the Lord do not help thee, how am I going to help you? Out of the barn floor or out of the wine press? I don't have anything to give you. And the king said unto her, what aileth thee? And she answered, this woman said unto me, give me thy son that we may eat him today, and we'll eat my son tomorrow. So we boiled my son and ate him. And I said unto her on the next day, give me thy son that we may eat him. And she hath hidden her son. Is anybody reading the enormity of what's going on here? But it was prophesied 600 years later. You tell me to get out of your country. You tell me to leave you alone. I will. And when you do, terrible things will happen. Terrible things will happen. And again, they're starting to eat the innocent. If I could put it this way, those who cannot help themselves. Verse 30, it came to pass when the king heard the words of the woman that he rent his clothes and he passed by upon the wall and the people looked and behold, he had sackcloth again within or underneath upon his flesh. Then he said, God do so and more also to me, if the head of Elisha the son of Shaphat shall stand on him this day. Now, there's a whole lot of preaching to be done on this passage. I'll skip a lot of it, make mentions of it or whatever. Isn't it something that when the people don't want God and God leaves, then when trouble comes, who do we blame? The Christian. We blame the Christian. We look at the Christian. I don't know where we are in America, but we are really close and we may have even stepped a little bit through the door, that who's the person to blame for all the problems we're having in America? It's those intolerant, homophobic, whatever words you want to give to us, what? Christians. We're all to blame for what's going on. Really. Really. Okay? I don't think so. But you'll see that the Bible even teaches as soon as man gets his own way, goes his way, and things don't work out, they're going to blame the people that won't get on board with us. You're the one who won't get on board with us. If you were on board with us, then go. So again, this man basically puts a death warrant out on Elisha and says that I want his head by the end of the day. Okay? Verse 32, but Elisha sat in his house, and the elders sat with him. And the king sent a man from before him, but before the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, see ye how this son of a murderer has sent to take away mine head. Look, when the messenger cometh, shut the door and hold him fast at the door. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him? Again, if you know the context of this whole passages, the last couple pages we've been reading, okay, Elisha is the guy who was telling the king, now you better watch out because the Syrians are going to send an army down through this army pass, through this mountain pass. You better be ready for them. And sure enough, when the Syrians came down, the Israelites were ready for them. And then the next day, or a few days later, Ben-Hadad said, well, we're going to send them this way. And sure enough, when they came down there, they were ready. Because Elisha kept telling the king, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to do. And finally, it was said to the king of Syria, Elisha even knows what you're whispering in your bedchamber. Anytime you give an order, he tells the king what's going on. You cannot ambush the Israelites because Elisha is down there telling him. So basically, then the guy said, well, instead of going after the armies of Israel, we'll just go kill Elisha. You remember the story? He was in the city of Dothan. Early in the morning, his servant gets up and looks out of the city, and what's surrounding the city? The entire Syrian army is surrounding the city. They're here to kill Elisha. I got a question for you. Did they kill him? Because didn't Elisha say something to a servant? Behold, those who are with us are more than those who are against us. And then all those men were struck with blindness, and they couldn't even find their own way. And Elisha basically took them and took them right into Samaria. They were all prisoners of war, if that's the way it was. And then God said, you know, we're not going to take them as prisoners of war. Give them a good meal and send them home. Okay? Now watch. I know where I am. You ready? Elisha just had a death warrant put out upon him from a man who knows that Elisha knows everything. Are you kidding me? You think you can kill Elisha? The entire Syrian army came after him, and they didn't even touch a hair on his head. Now, you're Elisha, and I kind of like this, okay? Verse 32, after the warrant was put out, Elisha knew it because he hears whispers in bedchambers, right? What's he doing? Sitting. He's not running. He's not hiding. He's just sitting there. But he basically said the king just sent an assassin. Hold the door. Don't let him in because the king is right behind him. Okay. Verse 33. And while ye yet talk with them, behold, the messenger came down on him and he said, behold, this evil is of the Lord. Why shall I wait for the Lord any longer? Then Elisha said, I'm in verse chapter 7. Hear ye the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel. Two measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria. Now watch this. And again, I'm not here to do math and get all busy about math. A piece of silver versus a shekel, okay, is really big. We're talking like $100 bills versus pennies. If you want an ass's head, you got to pay $400 for it. Whereas tomorrow, you want a bag of flour? Going to cost you a penny or two. You want to buy some barley? Penny. No problem. That means somewhere along the line, things are going to change drastic. We can't even buy pigeon dung for pennies right now. It costs us hundreds of dollars. And you're going to tell us that good food is going to be just for pennies? By the way, I did have somebody tell me one time that capitalism isn't in the Bible. And I'm like, well, really? This sounds a whole lot like the law of supply and demand. Anybody with me on this one? Why is pigeon dung being sold for such a great price? No supply and what? High demand. Everybody with me on this one? Okay. Tomorrow we're going to sell a really good food for a cheap price. Why? Big supply, so therefore what? Low demand. Drives prices, does it not? How many of you think that sounds like capitalism in the Bible? It sounds like it to me. Okay? So there we go. Okay? Now, here's the question that you'd almost want to ask Elijah. Where's all this food going to come from? If it's going to be so cheap, where's it coming from? We've got nothing here. Where's it all going to come from? Okay? I love this, and this is part of the story. Again, then a lord whose hand the king leaned on answered the man of God and said, behold, the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this thing be? And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but shalt not eat of it. So here's a smart aleck cabinet member saying, you know what? God is not big enough to do this. God can't do it. Your God can't do this. Wow. And Elisha basically looks at him and says this. Okay, you ready for my paraphrase? You're going to die hungry. You're going to see all this food I'm talking about and not get to eat one bite of it before you die. That's really what's going to happen, okay? You'll see it, but you'll not eat it, okay? Now we're going to change the story. You ready to change the story a little bit? We were with a man on a wall, the king on the wall, people eating children. All of a sudden, Elisha just says, hey, you want me dead? I'm just going to tell you this. This time tomorrow, you're going to have more food than you're going to know what to do with, okay? And man says, no, your God's not that big. And he says, hey, you're going to find out how big God is. In fact, I guess Elisha said, you better prepare to meet your God. Okay, whether he's your God or not, he is your God. And you need to know you're going to meet him tomorrow. Verse 3, there were four leprous men at the entering in of the gate. They said one to another, why sit we here until we die? Now, I tell people these men were sick, but they had some smarts about them. Okay? They had some smarts. Now, again, I don't want to spend a lot of time on leprosy, but if you were a leprous person, you were pretty much cast out of the general population, and you had to kind of live in isolation, and the people would not be around you. Again, stop and think about this. If you are a leprous person, you're probably a whole lot hungrier than anybody else. Because if there was no food to eat, you were definitely the one who got none first. Okay? So these guys are probably in really bad shape. They're not allowed really in the city. They're kind of sitting over by the gate, out of the way, not near anybody. Okay? And so again, they're very, very hungry. And finally, one of them says, okay, and I like this, okay? All right? If we just keep doing what we're doing, we're going to what? Die. All right? Now, you've all heard, okay, the first step of insanity is what? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting what? Different results. How many of you have ever experienced that by when you turn the light switch on, it doesn't come on? So you just keep flicking the light switch a couple more times. Anybody with me on that? Come on, you've all done it, right? You're insane, okay? No, because the first step of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting what? Different results. And these guys realize this. So they're saying, we're not insane. If we just keep doing the same thing, sitting here at the gate, we're going to what? Die. There's no food for us, okay? We're going to die, so let's change something there. Let's do something. Verse 4. If we say we will enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, and we will die there. If we sit still here, we'll die also. Now, again, they're leprous men. They go into the city and say, we don't have any food. They're not getting any. You're lepers. What are you doing here? And maybe in the city they wouldn't have died of starvation. They would have died of sword wounds. Are you with me? Hey, we're in this city. What are you doing in here? You're going to infect all of us. Maybe they'd have killed them. So if we go into the city, okay, it's a famine in there, so we're going to die in there. If we sit here, we're going to die. Middle of verse 4. Now, therefore, come, let us fall under the host of the Syrians. If they save us alive, we shall live. If they kill us, we shall, and I like the next word, but die. Which means what? That's what's going to happen anyway if we sit here or go in the city. So it seems to me they have choices A, B, and C. A, go in the city, that's not going to work. Sit here, B, that's not going to work. Let's try C. We'll go over to the Assyrians. Now, there's two things that could happen. What are they? They could give us food and we could live. Or they might not give us food and we could die. They're running with a 50% chance here. Now, choice A, 100% chance you're going to die. Choice B, 100% chance you're going to die. Choice C, 50% chance. Now, you want me to be an optimist or pessimist right here? What do you want? Okay. I'm going to go with 50% chance we're going to what? Live. Sounds like something worth trying, isn't it? Okay. Sounds like something. So maybe we can do it, though. Verse 5. They rose up in the twilight to go under the camp of the Syrians. I'm thinking twilight. Maybe if they'd have headed down that way during the daylight, the Israelites would have seen them and called them traitors or something like that. Okay, so definitely we're just going to go down there when it's very, very dark so that that doesn't happen there. So we're going to go down at twilight. All right. And notice what it says. They came to the edge, or they came to the uttermost part right there at the camp of the Syrians. Behold, there was no man there. For the Lord had made the host of the Syrians hear a noise of chariots and a noise of horses, even the noise of a great host. And they said one to another, lo, the king of Israel hath hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us. Wherefore they arose and fled in the twilight. They left their tents, their horses, their asses, even the camp as it was, and fled for their life. Okay? Now, again, just don't have to make a big thing, but my God can do anything. And let me tell you, God has some kind of stereo system that is unbelievable. Is anybody with me on that? Okay. When God needs special effects, He's the best. He's the best. Because every one of the Assyrians knew they're coming down upon us. We hear the chariots coming. We can hear the infantrymen running. We can just hear it. We've just got to get out of here with our lives, and not one person stay behind. God can absolutely do things that are unamazing, that are amazing. Look at verse 8, please. And when these lepers came into the uttermost part of the camp, they went into one tent and did eat and drink and carried from thither silver and gold and raiment and went and hid it and came again and entered into another tent and carried again from thither, or got it out of there from thence also, and went and hid it. Now, again, I just kind of did this, I believe, okay? We know about Deuteronomy. We're now on these passages, are we not? Okay? I'm going to talk about these men, okay? Just try to come up with an outline. They're delight, all right? Notice three things, okay? And we'll come back to that, okay? Refreshment, food. There was all kinds of food there. But when they were done eating, what else did they notice was there? Gold and silver, riches. When they were done eating, collecting gold and silver, what was the next thing they went for? Clothes. What kind of clothes do you think a leprous person wears? Strips of rags or whatever? I mean, they had refreshment, riches, raiment. Now, I'm just telling you, you see what I have up there. I believe this is a picture of a redeemed sinner. I mean, you come to Jesus. Can you give me verses? Can you give me thoughts of the Bible? Does God give us refreshments? Hey, we sing a song, doesn't it? I'm eating somewhere, right? I'm living under the mountain, and I'm what? Eating. I'm going to banquets, folks, in heaven. I'm going to banquets. We're going to eat, okay? It's going to be absolutely amazing. What about riches? Don't lay for yourselves here on the earth, okay? Gold and silver. Don't lay it up. But lay up for yourselves treasures where? In heaven. And by the way, it's really a rich place. And I've said this before. I even had a picture one time that I put on the board or whatever. If Scrooge McDuck continues his way in heaven, then all he will be doing is working for the road crew. You've seen Scrooge McDuck in his big vault with all the gold coins in there? He's just going to be working for the road crew. Because when you take that gold out of there, what are they going to do with it? Patch up the streets or put it on the road? I mean, gold is what they put on the streets. So here's my question. If gold is for the streets and diamond is kind of the foundations, then, wow, there must be some other things that are worth a whole lot more than that in heaven. You talk about riches. Folks, I'm the king's son. I'm going to be rich. I am rich. And I know this, and it all starts with this, but you know what? When I got saved, God took off my old rags and put on me the robe of righteousness. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Here they are. Are you a Christian today? Life's hard. Okay? We've been sitting at the gate, and it's a little hard, is it not? But God's got a place for us, and it's going to be delightful. That's just the word I come up with. And you probably wonder how I got the word delight, because the other two words that I'm going to give you were easy. I couldn't come up with this one, so I struggled with delight. But it's going to be delightful, okay? There's better words than delight. Folks, it is going to be absolutely awesome when we go to heaven. But you know what? You get to be a Christian. God's already started to give us that stuff now. He takes care of us. I've never seen the righteous forsaken or his seed begging bread. God takes care of us. Again, we're rich, and God, I tell people, we've all got too many clothes. Am I the only one that says that? Or we all got too many clothes, okay? God has just taken care of us, but we've got his robe of righteousness. So again, they head on down there, and you can see nothing is there. Let's go to verse 9. Then they said one to another, "We do not well." Now, I don't know that I've ever used the words, "I do not well." If I would do that, I go, "I do not well." You'd all look at me and say, "When did you become British?" Okay, "I do not well." Okay, I would say something like this. This isn't right. This is not right. All right, what's not right? Are you kind of putting it together? You've got it. We are here eating. And hide. I like to know where they hid it. Where were they hiding this stuff? Under trees? Under roots? I don't know where they were hiding it. Okay? But they were hiding it. And all of a sudden they wake up and they go, what? We're not doing right. Okay? Again, thank God for every blessing he gives to his children. But here's a D that was pretty easy. They're in a dilemma. Have you ever been in a dilemma? You know, on one hand, oh man, this is really good. And then all of a sudden a thought hits you, what? It's in right. It's not right, all right? And so again, they've got a dilemma. Notice what it is there. In verse 9, "This is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. If we tarry to the morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household." Again, they came up with the realization. You know what? We are filled to the gills. There's more than we can eat. There's more riches here. There's more clothing than we can hide. This place is just absolutely full of goods, and this is not right what we're doing. They realized that they were hoarding up the blessings instead of sharing them with those in need. Are you with me on that one? What if I told you I found an article on the internet and it was a man, and he discovered the cure for cancer? I mean, he had cancer, folks. And he had a lab, and he had the wherewithal, and he found the cure for cancer. And he cured himself, and he's doing fine today. What would you all think about now? Either you say, "Pastor, you're lying to me," which I'm just getting the point across, or what are we saying about this man? "Wow, you're selfish. You have the cure for cancer, and you kept it to yourself. And there's people out there with it, dying from it every moment, and you didn't share it." That's terrible. That's hoarding up the blessings instead of sharing it with those that are in need. Again, their realization, then they reasoned. You know what? It's just not right that we sit here and do this. Maybe something's going to happen. Maybe some Assyrians are going to come back and find us in this camp. And by ourselves, we're defenseless. There's only four of us, and they're going to kill us. If we don't tell somebody, do something, we could find ourselves in big trouble. Others needed what they had, and they wanted to share it. Hey, we're doing all right. We need to share it. We need to give it to somebody else. So, again, if you look here, they're resolved. They resolved to go and tell others what they found. They wanted someone else to be as helped as they had been. So, again, when you come to the end of verse 9, they're saying, you know what, we got to go tell somebody. We need to go back and tell the king exactly what we found here, because there's so much here that everybody needs to eat of all the things that we've done. Notice verse 10. "So they came and called unto the port of the city, and they told them, saying, 'We came to the camp of the Syrians, and behold, there's no man there, neither voice of man, but horses tied and asses tied, and the tents are there.' And he called the porters, and they told it to the king's house within." I think that's funny. They're lepers. "We're not letting you in, so we'll talk to the guy above the gate, but we're just telling you, there's nobody down there. It's absolutely empty, and everything is just the way it is." And again, the porter then called, and he told it to the king's house. Okay. Notice verse 12. "The king arose in the night and said unto his servants, 'I will now show you what the Syrians have done to us.' They know
that we are hungry, therefore are they gone out of the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, when they come out of the city, we shall catch them alive and get in to the city. So again, you're following me through. These guys come and they tell the truth. They said, look, the camp's empty. There's food everywhere. And what's the answer they get back? It's a trap. Now, at this point in time, this is how it's worked, okay? It's a besieged city. The Syrians at this time have not been able to get in by attacking, okay? Their weapons of attack have not gotten into Syria yet, Samaria. The city so far is safe on the inside. We're really, really hungry. And really, the way the Syrians are hoping to win the battle is what? Everybody dies of starvation, or they finally open up the gates and come out and attack. And in attacking, then the Syrians can do what? Win the battle. But at this point in time, the Syrians can't get in. And so everybody's thinking, well, we got to think of a way to get them out. And this is what they're doing. They're going to go ahead and they're going to attack us if we come out there. Okay? Now, verse 13. So the king says, no way. We're not biting on this one. It's a trap. Verse 13. One of his servants answered and said, let some take, I pray thee, five of the horses that remain, which are left in the city. Not many horses in the city. What's been happening to them? They've been eating them. Okay, so now if they were to go attack, they'd be at a big disadvantage, okay? Behold, it says in the middle of verse 13, there is all the multitude of Israel that are left in it. Behold, I say, there even is the multitude of Israelites that are consumed. Let us send and see. They took, therefore, two chariot horses, and the king sent after the host of Syria, saying, go and see. And they went after them unto the Jordan, and lo, all the way was full of garments and vessels which the Syrians had cast away in their haste. And the messengers returned and told the king. And the people went out and spoiled the tents of the Syrians. So a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, two measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. Again, they made a decision. We're going to go tell somebody. We're going to tell somebody what we know. Now again, they're lepers. What are the chances of them having a high standing in society? Being believed. Probably not high, okay? It involved courage, folks. I do that, okay? It takes courage to share the message of Jesus with a lost world. These guys were probably scared. They're probably not going to believe us. We're just begging lepers. But we got to do it. Now, anytime somebody tells me, oh, witnessing is easy. Really? A little tough. It's not tough because the information's hard. It's just nervous. Because a lot of times you can share Jesus with somebody and what happens? They don't like it. They tell you you're wrong. It's not that way. So it involves courage, okay? People really don't want to see what we have to, they don't want to hear what we have to say. And again, I'm just going to put this, regardless of the response we receive, when we share the good news of Jesus, and it must be shared. When we receive it, it must be shared. We've got to do it. Well, nobody's going to listen. Okay? Get some courage. Go out and tell people about Jesus. Maybe nobody wants to hear, but you go tell them. I don't know. You got chicken on a stick down at Grange Fair. Wow, I just found chicken on a stick. Who cares? Okay? Well, it's really good. Maybe to you. We don't care. We don't care about your chicken on a stick. Okay? But you might say, if you ever want to know where to get chicken on a stick, you know the man to see. I'll tell you how to get it. Maybe people don't want to hear about it or whatever. I don't know. Is there anybody here that got chicken on the stick and you didn't like it? Maybe somebody. Okay. It's greasy. It's got cholesterol. You're going to die from it. So what? Okay. We're okay. Hey, I'm going to go out with a smile on my face. I don't know about you. Okay. So, again, it takes courage, but we're going to go tell somebody. Okay. Again, the next thing, it involves compassion. Okay. Please, just hear me out on this. You are lepers. How has the general population treated you the last couple months or years? Really? You're a leper. Oh, they have just embraced you with charity and gifts, right? I heard that lepers sometimes, whenever they moved anywhere, they had to yell out, unclean, unclean, we're unclean, don't come near us. So again, it's compassion for those who have treated you. And again, I think I mentioned it at the funeral service on Tuesday. I spoke on John 3:16, for God so loved. Folks, do you realize that when God so loved us, who we really were?
We're children of the devil. Jesus said that in John 8:44. You are the father of the devil. Okay, how do we treat Jesus? He was despised and what? Rejected of men. I mean, God has given rules and commandments for us to obey. Have we? Absolutely not. And yet, while we were yet sinners, what? He showed His love for us, and He died for us. That's love. Anybody can love a relative that treats you well and is nice to you. Am I right about that? It's all easy to be friends with somebody who treats you nice and gives you things. That's easy. What's compassion, though? Loving people that have what? Treated you really bad. Why should we go tell them after how they've treated us? And you might say that about people. You know, well, the way they treat me, why would I want to tell them about Jesus? They're just going to make fun of me. Yeah? For those men to go to a city full of people that had no doubt mistreated them, despised them, and ignored them, took great what? Compassion. It took great compassion for them to do that. And then I'm just going to put this one as I put this. But how did it turn out, folks? I'm just going to put the word, it involved conversions. People that were hungry one moment were what? Full the next. I mean, it worked. It worked. I don't want to be so down on it that the world doesn't want to hear us. Folks, telling people about Jesus, it does work. It still works, okay? When the message was heard, it was met with skepticism. What was the skepticism? Oh, it's just a what? Trick. Whatever. Okay? Yeah, but, hey, they shared it. At least they did that. Then it was believed and the city was saved. You know what? You may share the gospel with somebody and it doesn't really work the first time. They don't want it. They make fun of you. Okay. But you know what? Don't quit. I do this because four men refused to hoard up their blessings, a multitude was saved. Does that make sense? Okay. That makes sense to me. People got saved. I mean, they were going to die. Right? They were eating children. That's how bad it was. People got saved. Again, when you share your faith, remember that you're not responsible for the results. One plants, one waters, and God what? Gives the increase, okay? And so I think we need to make sure we understand that. And so basically, I kind of changed this. We talk about soul winning. But if nobody got saved, then what? Well, we didn't win. Well, if you're not a winner, then what's the other term we usually put on it here, folks? Well, I went out soul winning and nobody got saved, so I'm just a soul loser. Okay? This isn't a game that somebody wins and somebody loses. You know, oh, well, so-and-so won somebody in the Lord. Oh, good, you're a soul winner. Well, how'd you do? Nobody got saved. Oh, sorry. You're the loser. It's not that. It's just what? And I kind of tried to change it. Not soul winners, it's what? Soul warners. We're just telling people about Jesus. That's what we do. Folks, there is destruction ahead. There is hell to be paid. Your sins to be paid for in hell if you don't get saved, okay? So I just kind of put it this way. Our job is to tell. God does the what? God does the saving. I still go back to this. One of the worst soul winners in the whole Bible, if you're doing it on that way, was Noah. He was terrible. How many people got saved at his preaching? Okay, and out in the general public, nobody. But see, that's not what the gauge is. You just preach it. And the Bible does say that he was a preacher of righteousness. That's what he was known as in the New Testament, a preacher of righteousness. This guy could preach. Okay? They didn't get saved. So again, as we put down here, we need to make sure that we're just out there telling. Now, again, I go back to this, and then we'll finish the story. You ready? Do you know how you got saved? Now, I'm going to tell you this. Do you have any Bible verses memorized? And if your answer is, Pastor, when I go to soul win, I can't remember any Bible verses. It's okay. Because I tell people, I was sitting there witnessing to a guy, and I thought for sure in the middle of the living room, he and I were going to get in a fight. He was coming over to attack me, and I was looking at him to see if I could take him, and he said he was looking at me to see if he could take me. And he said to me later, boy, that was going to be one awful fight. But he was ready to fight me. I tried to quote John 3:16. I have no idea what I said. But it didn't sound like, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. It started off with, well, God, he loves you. I mean,
Folks, I was drawing a blank. And all I know is he sent Jesus to die for you. And if you believe on Jesus, you can be saved. That was like my John 3:16. Now, if you were a school teacher and I wrote down that down for a memory verse on Friday, would you give me some points? And yet I tell people this, another man was talking to him about the Lord and led him to the Lord. And he said, not long ago, the pastor talked to me about the Lord and the things that he said, I can't get them out of my heart. And I'm like, what in the world did I say? Because I didn't even get John 3:16 out. But I know what salvation is. And I just said it in my own words, under pressure. I knew it. So if you're saying, well, I can't quote any verses when I lead somebody to the Lord. You don't have to. Do my John 3:16. Hey, God loves you. Jesus came and died for you. And if you believe in him, you can be saved. Well, what's that? That's John 3:16. My paraphrase. It'll get somebody saved. I serve a big God. I serve a big God. So again, our job is just to tell people. You know the story. You know how you got saved. Just tell somebody. Again, I go back to this. Soul winning or evangelism is just what? One beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And you find it at Jesus. There is no more on the board, but we got a part of the story you can't leave out. What about this guy that made fun of Elisha for saying tomorrow there would be a lot of food? What happened to him? Okay. Notice verse 17. And the king appointed the Lord on whose hand he leaned to have charge of the gate. And the people trod upon him in the gate, and he died, as the man of God had said, who spoke when the king came down to him. And it came to pass, as the man of God had spoken to the king, saying, two measures of barley for a shekel and a measure of fine flour for a shekel shall be tomorrow, about this time in the gate of Samaria. And the Lord answered the man of God and said, now behold, if the Lord should make windows in heaven, might such a thing be? And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not eat of it. And so it fell out unto him, for the people trod upon him in the gate, and he what? Died. They were just saying, hey, people are going to be going in and out of this gate. We need somebody to organize the mass that tries to run out of this gate or tries to get back in with all the things they found. You organize the gate, and sure enough, somehow he got out in the middle of the people, and they trampled him down. You'll see it, but you won't what? He died hungry. He should have believed the Word of God. He should have believed the Word of God. The Word says, if you believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, thou shalt be saved. But it also says, if you're not believed, you are condemned. You are condemned already. Do you know Jesus Christ is your Savior? Good. Now we got a job. Just tell somebody about it. Father, I pray that you might help us, that we will just be people helping people find Christ. That's all. Lord, we know where to find him. You're just real close to everybody we find in the book of Acts, chapter 17. Lord, you're not far away, and if a person whispers out a prayer, you're there in a second to save. So, Lord, I help us to be just good lepers, to be good beggars, and tell a dying world that,